It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Jim Vandehei says he was more interested in finishing a bottle of Jägermeister than in his college education when he attended UW Oshkosh in the 1990s.
Why it matters. Jim is now an experienced political journalist and successful entrepreneur. He co-founded the news websites Politico and Axios. He's also the CEO of Axios, where articles are set up with get-to-the-point phrases like why it matters and the bottom line.
The bottom line, his new book is called Just the Good Stuff, No BS Secrets to Success, No Matter What Life Throws at You. He delivered this year's commencement speech at UW Oshkosh. He's with us to share his Wisconsin roots and his advice for college and high school graduates. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
You were just recently back home to address this year's UW Oshkosh graduating class, and you told them, among other things, to be proud of where they're from. What makes you proud of being from Oshkosh and UW Oshkosh?
First off, I love everything about Wisconsin. I love going home. My parents are still there in Oshkosh. My brother, Johnny, and my sister, Julie, they're both in Oshkosh. They all live within about a mile of each other. I went to grade school, high school, college in Oshkosh, and I go back all the time. I'm a huge Packer fan, huge Brewer fan, huge Buck fan, so I'm pro-Wisconsin.
In that speech, you cited some of the professors who really inspired you and turned you on another path, and I think that's one of the themes from your book as well, finding out the right people to be inspired by. Talk a little bit about what you've learned over the years and what you're sharing in the new book.
Yeah, I mean, particularly as it relates to Wisconsin, I talked a lot to the students at the commencement address, and I address it in the book, just about the advantages of being from a small town and going to a smaller school. Not that UW is that small, but you just get this level of attention and individual kind of affection from your professors you might not get at other schools. And I had one, Gene Hintz in journalism, this guy Jim Simmons in political science, who just saw things in me that I don't think I saw in myself back then, and really encouraged me to pursue journalism and pursue journalism by covering politics, hence the two, the double major that I had. And it made a profound difference in my life. And, you know, we grew up and didn't really leave the state that often. Like, we went to Florida one time for a vacation. We went to Mackinac Island. But for the most part, we went up to Three Lakes. So I spent almost all of my life only in Wisconsin. And, you know, looking back, just benefited tremendously from it. I was even telling my wife this morning, I just got back, I was there all weekend, and you go for a walk, and I had more people wave to me in one day, just because they're friendly, than I have in 20 years in Virginia. It's just a different place, and it's a special place, and I love it.
You were not, as you describe yourself, Jim, a rock star kind of student. You squeaked into UW Oshkosh after a couple of years at a two-year school. Your grade point your first year was sub 2.0. Set that scene for us a little bit before you started on the path you're on now.
Yeah, I guess charitably, I was a late bloomer. I was terrible in high school. I was a good partier, not necessarily good at academics. I graduated the bottom third of my high school class. I still vividly remember. I am scarred by going in to see my guidance counselor, and they hauled my parents in, and they said, there's no way this kid's going to college. I still went to a two-year college to get into UW Oshkosh, where I still struggled until I found what I wanted to do, which is I found journalism, I found political science, really matched kind of, I think, the skill set that I had, the interests that I had, and things took off in a much more positive direction from that. But a big part of writing the book, and a reason I was really excited to go back and do the commencement addresses, I think there's a lot of people out there who have a similar life trajectory, and you kind of think, well, I didn't get that great of grades, or I didn't come from privilege or money, therefore I can't go be a surgeon, or I can't go to New York and work on Wall Street, or go to DC and work in politics. And my message is, like, you sure as hell can. Like, there's nothing that's holding you back. And if you find something that you want to do, you're super passionate about it, you do the hard work, and there is a lot of hard work if you want to be successful at anything. And I don't sugarcoat that. I work my tail off to do the things that I've done. But that's all very possible. And if that inspires, you know, one kid in Ripon, Wisconsin, or, you know, Manitowoc, to say, okay, I'm going to go do something I might not have otherwise done and had kind of the courage to do it, that would be cool.
I knew about your journalistic career at the, you know, the Washington Post and then a Politico and Axios. I didn't know about your stint with the Brilliant News here in Wisconsin till I read Just the Good Stuff. Tell us a little bit about what that summer meant for you.
It was everything. So Brilliant Wisconsin, small community, basically sandwiched in between Oshkosh and in Green Bay. And I had a real interest in journalism and thought I was going to be a sports journalist. And then I was like, I really like the news in general. So I picked up a list of every newspaper in the state of Wisconsin. It was alphabetical. And I just started calling it because I had a summer where I would have interned for free. And one of the first places I called was at Brilliant News. And this guy, Zane Zander, who recently passed away, he picked up the phone and he said, could you come here today? And I said, sure, yeah, I'll drive up there. And I really hadn't taken any journalism classes. I had covered sports a little bit at the Oshkosh Northwestern. And I go up there and I explain this to him and he just cuts me off. He says, yeah, will you run my newspaper? And I'm like, I don't think I'm the guy who should be running your newspaper. I haven't done anything. He's like, well, I have an issue. My editor's going to leave and for 3 months to go to Finland. And if I don't find someone to run it for those 3 months, he's never coming back. And so if you do this in 1 week, I will teach you how to do everything from the writing to the photography to the layout to understanding agriculture community, like you name it. And he was true to his word. I would work 80-100 hours a week. And he gave me the best pay package you could get if you're, you know, 19 or 20 year old living in Wisconsin who didn't have any money. He offered me, I think it was $300 a week. He gave me a new rental car that I could use for the summer, and he let me stay in his cottage, which was on a little pond full of largemouth bass. And part of my pay package was the refrigerator would always be loaded with beer. And I thought I had hit the jackpot, and that really got me hooked. And I you know, screwed up a lot of stuff early on, but then learned a lot and really was on fire for journalism after that. And again, like, that doesn't happen everywhere. That was a magic of like somebody believing that hard work and, you know, a good person could probably put those two things together and do things.
And Jim, that ties into another, I think, theme of a lot of the advice chapters in your book. You talk about, you know, you can't completely make your own luck, but you can in the sense that when you get that opportunity, like you did at the Brilliant News, making sure you get the most you can out of it.
Yeah, you know, you hear it a lot about positioning yourself for luck, which is, yes, like I could point to a bunch of breaks that gave me career success. But I will say in my own defense, like I was taking those chances. I was making those calls. I was doing the internships, right? You got to put yourself in places to benefit from luck. If you just sit in the house and you're just scrolling through Instagram, you're probably not going to get lucky. But if you're picking up the phone, you're talking to people, you're asking people for advice, you're volunteering to be the first person in the office, the last person to leave, that's what stands out. And I've certainly benefited from that. I had good work ethic. I had a curious mind. And, you know, maybe I was too dumb to feel like I was going to fail. And there's some mix of that put me in a really nice position to, you know, ultimately move out to D.C. And that's where my career took off. You know, even when I moved to D.C., I sent out 100-120 resumes. And the only job I got was carrying bricks for a bricklayer for 6 months until I got a job in journalism. So it's not, success doesn't come to anyone instantaneously, but I kind of like carrying bricks. Like I've always liked almost everything I've ever done. I loved delivering pizzas at Little Caesars and Red's Pizza in Oshkosh when I did it. But once I moved out to D.C., got into journalism, got a job, it was just such a natural fit. I love to write. I love to think. I love to be curious. I love to be mischievous. And like journalism was the perfect place for it.
Jim Vandehei is with us sharing life lessons, including from his time, his growing up here in Wisconsin. Jim is co-founder and CEO of the news website Axios. His new book of advice is called Just the Good Stuff. What led you, Jim, to tackle advice for the next generation, chapter by chapter in your new book?
Yeah, you know, I write in the beginning, it takes a lot of hubris to say you know enough to go give people advice on how to handle things. The reason that I wrote the book, though, was I was in this unique position where, okay, I became a journalist. I worked for the Wall Street Journal. I worked for the Washington Post. I covered presidents. We started, a group of us started Politico. We started Axios. And I was CEO of both companies and still am CEO of Axios. And So I was in this rare position where I was a journalist who happened to become an entrepreneur, who happened to become a CEO. So I've seen every level of management and leadership, and I took really close notes, and I'm pretty honest about myself. And so like, there's a ton of stuff in learning all these things that I screwed up that I wish someone had told me, hey, do it this way. And that's what the purpose of the book is, to say, listen, if you're graduating college, you're entering the workforce, you want to be a manager, you want to be a CEO, you want to be a better CEO, I think there's a ton of advice in there that comes from a really honest place of me screwing it up the first time, but then watching people in positions of extraordinary power who do it well and trying to build that into my own repertoire. So hopefully anybody walks away from the book, they walk away with 10, 15, 20 different tricks that help them be better at work and be happier at work.
One bit of advice I loved, we talked a little bit about people who'd inspired you, Jim. You also say watch for the people in your workplace who are terrible or toxic or bad in some way, figure out what makes them that way, and then do the opposite. How do we do that?
I think a big part of it is being open-eyed, right? Like watching what other people do. Don't be so self-indulgent that you're not paying attention to the people around the table. And I would say when you start to pay attention, you see the attributes in people that are magnetic, right? You want to be around people who are optimistic. You want to be around people who are hardworking. You want to be around people who are doing the right thing for the right reason. The flip side of that is when you see people who are talking behind other people's back, or they're being deceitful, or they're cutting corners, or they're trying to knock someone off so they can get ahead, it's repulsive. And when you see that and you're repulsed by it, you should know that's not the type of person that you want to be. You never want to have any of those attributes. And so I've probably learned as much about leadership and management and even myself by watching people who I thought had bad values and bad actions and just tried to do the opposite of it. But it does require just paying a lot more attention. I talk in the book a lot about, I think one of the reasons I had success is I was a pretty good poker player when I was younger, and part of playing poker, and one of the reasons I've encouraged my children to play a lot of poker, is it forces you to interact with different people from different lots of life. It forces you to read other people around a table. It forces you to be able to control your own impulses. And I think attributes like that help you just better understand people. In some ways, it's a way to teach yourself emotional intelligence, reading people and reading between the lines.
You also talk about health, self-improvement in the book. And here you say your Wisconsin upbringing might get in your way. You give a detailed list of, you know, potatoes soaked with butter and sour cream, smothered with cheese, and fresh fish bathed in flour, bread dropped in boiling oil, and so on. How much of a fight is you to stay healthy versus the food you grew up eating here in the state?
It's funny because every time I go home, my mom still serves the potatoes with the cornflakes, the cheese, and the sour cream. I'm like, Mom, a potato is actually pretty good in and of its own. Yeah, I try not to be too preachy in the book, but one thing I found for myself is, like, I'm only really good at work, or even really good as a husband and a father, is if I'm feeling good about myself. And one of the things that's been a massive difference maker for me in my own life is just being very conscious about being healthy, about what am I putting into my body, but also exercising and vigorously and in different ways just to stay active. I have this weird spinal disorder that could become a real problematic, and I became obsessed with whatever. I'm going to try to be as fit as I can so I can, like, be as productive as I can for as long as I can. And so far, so good. And to me, it's not about here, go follow this diet or go run 8 miles. It's much more think about you and think about what are the things that you do that make you feel good about yourself and make you perform better. And what are the things you do that, if you're being honest with yourself, make you feel like crap. And try to stop doing the things that make you feel like crap and try to do the things that make you feel better about yourself. It sounds so simple, but I don't think most people do that type of personal inventory. And when you do it, it's not self-indulgent or selfish to do that. I think it's beneficial. You're just going to be a better friend, a better neighbor.
Speaking of self-indulgence, Jim, in that address at UW Oshkosh and in your book, you talk about the need to not just focus on the benefits to yourself and improving yourself and your career outlook, but keeping in mind other people and serving other people. Why do you want to see that front and center?
I think we all know it. I think we feel it even when we're young, when we go help maybe an elderly neighbor, you know, shovel their driveway, or we volunteer for something. you feel good about it. You feel better than if you did something for yourself. And the more I've been embedded in companies, the more I believe this to be true. Like, I get the most satisfaction and joy from being able to help someone else do something they didn't think that they could do. Or, you know, with our company, we talk all the time about we're trying to get people smarter, faster on what matters. That's what Axios does. And there's like a higher purpose to that. It's not just about us making money. And obviously we're a for-profit company in capitalism. So we want to make money and we want it to be durable, but there's something bigger than that. And when you play to something bigger than that, you just feel better about yourself. And I life throws enough at us, like bad things happen. I'm 53, so I could give you my list. You could give me yours of friends and family who are suffering in ways that seem patently unfair. And so the more you can surround yourself with good feeling and good people and good deeds, I think the more fortified you're going to be for those really difficult moments, which stack up the older we get.
Since we're talking during graduation season, Jim, and you hire young journalists, you have over the years, wanted to get your thoughts on kids these days. And from where I'm sitting, I'm on hiring committees sometimes, 20-somethings come in, and they're amazing. If I had 20-something me had been up against them for a job, I'd be unemployed, I think. What is your take on this rising generation?
Yeah, I'm more in your camp, right? I think there's a lot of people that roll their eyes at this new generation. They feel like it's entitled and they all want to be CEO by the time they're 24. I just chalk that up to be healthy ambition. I think what I see coming into the workforce is people who, like you said, are just, they know technology. They're so fluent in culture in ways that we never were. And they are, but they're motivated differently. So when I got into the workforce, probably when you got into the workforce, we wanted a paycheck and we didn't want someone to hit us. Now they want a lot more than that, buddy, right? They want meaning. They want purpose. They want to feel like the work that they're doing is making them better and somehow is making society better. And I think they're right and we were wrong. I think it's great if the amount of time that we spend at work, why not doing something that makes you feel good about yourself and feel like the company you work for stands for things that give you a smile on your face? And so it just means you manage them differently. So I spend probably a lot less time talking about how much money you're going to make and much more time talking about the good that we're doing or the environment that I'm creating. So you can be a high achiever, but you can do it in a place that you feel is safe and you feel like it's dynamic and you feel it's respectful. And that's all anybody ultimately wants. You know, what I tell younger workers is there's something you can learn from our generation, which is you do have to work hard. Like there is a direct correlation between effort and output. And that doesn't mean you have to work 100 hours a week, but it does mean when you're working, work hard. There's nothing to be ashamed about that. And that ultimately it is a job. Like you have to rely on family and friends and your church and other things for a level of meaning that most companies just aren't going to be able to provide for you. So I spend a lot of time basically trying to merge my generation with the new generation. And I think the hybrid of the two is really cool. I think the work environment now is way better than it was when I was younger. I think we talk about topics more forthrightly. And I think the amount of transparency that younger people expect is great. I think they want too much transparency, but that's okay. They just want to know what's going on and why it's going on.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
I appreciate it. Take care. Go Packers.
Jim VandeHei is co-founder and CEO of the news website Axios and a graduate of his hometown school, UW Oshkosh. We talked to him today about life advice he shares in his new book. It's called Just the Good Stuff, No BS Secrets to Success, No Matter What Life Throws at You.